Hello and welcome to the Stop Stressing Me Out podcast. I'm your host, Victoria Smith, and I'm so excited to invite you back for our 8th episode in our 12 episode series on workplace well-being and how we can improve the workplace, make it a less stressful environment. What are some of the different tools and strategies that are available to us? Now, this week on the podcast, we're going to talk about employee volunteerism. Now, some of you may be thinking, Victoria, what does volunteerism have to do with workplace well-being? Well, let me tell you. From Gallup to Forbes to the Harvard Business Review, many of the top data analysts in workplace wellness have identified employee volunteerism as the one wellness feature that actually makes a difference in retention and overall well-being. Why is that? Well, we're actually going to get into that in today's episode, so I don't want to spoil it for you right now. Today, we are joined by Jerome Tenniel. Now, Jerome was a member of the U.S. Navy from 2004 to 2012 and began his career in the social impact sector almost by accident. He needed a job, he landed one as a volunteer coordinator, and it kicked off his career in the social impact sector and his passion to revolutionize the way that businesses can make a difference in their communities. I first learned about Jerome through LinkedIn and quickly realized how much of a thought leader he is in this space. He shared his insights and best practices with many publications in the sector, and he was one of the authors and editors that created the book, Transforming Disruption to Impact, Rethinking Volunteer Engagement for a Rapidly Changing World. This book is a collection of essays from thought leaders across the social impact space, talking to not only the challenges that face volunteerism today, but also the opportunities that exist. It's a fantastic read, and I will link to it in today's show notes. In this episode, we're going to talk about not only the connection between volunteerism and workplace well-being and why it's so powerful, but we'll also dive into how to measure impact, what to consider if you're launching your own employee volunteer program, what's missing from an inclusion perspective in typical volunteering, and so much more. So let's just head straight into the episode. Well, thank you very much, Jerome, for joining me on the podcast. We're so pleased to have you here.
Thanks. I appreciate your welcoming me on.
Well, I got to start with a question that we ask all of our guests. What is stressing you out today?
So this is going to make you laugh, but if you're a listener and if you have a beard like I do, then you're going to really empathize with this. So the thing that's really stressing me out right now is the fact that I need to get my beard trimmed. And for people who are unfamiliar with beard trimming, I would sort of put it in that same category as getting your taxes done or maybe changing your own car oil. Yeah, right. It's something that you can do, but it's really time consuming and it's like really, really messy. And so it's much easier to have somebody else do it for you. So that's where I'm sort of at right now. I've not been able to get the availability of my normal barber. So that's the thing that is actually stressing me out, as strange as that is.
Because you've got a relationship with that barber, right? You don't want to just go to anybody, right?
They know exactly how I rock my beard.
So I completely get that. I have a husband with a beard, so I fully understand that. Yeah. What is stressing me out today is I got a call from school today that my son was sick, but I know that he just doesn't want to go on the walk that they want to go on every single Wednesday. So that was my, you know, just watching the phone to see if it would ring again today and like, please God, no. But thankfully, we're good. So he went on that walk. Okay. Well, to ground the conversation for our listeners, can you please give us a little bit of an outline of your career journey and what led you to running employee volunteer programs?
Yeah. So it's not going to be a shock to most people, but I didn't start out in this career field. I actually began my service journey when I was in the armed forces. So I was in the Navy, the U.S. Navy from 2004 to 2012. And I think it was really through that, you know, that sort of 8-year stint that I became very purpose-driven and duty-oriented as a professional. When I transitioned out of the service in 2012, I simply just needed a job. And so I took a job at a nonprofit as a volunteer coordinator at the lowest bottom rung. And what I didn't realize then that I quickly realized after about a year in the role is that I became very passionate about volunteer engagement and sort of reimagining what serving my country meant. And so for me, I sought to stay in the field of social impact. Now, I spent 6 years in the nonprofit sector, and I think progressively over time, my career advanced and I ended up leading the volunteer program for a national 501c3 here in the US. And then eventually in 2017, I decided that it was time to make sort of a career switch And it wasn't that big of a switch. It was just making a pivot from nonprofit volunteer engagement to corporate volunteer engagement. And so in 2017, I joined Mary International Social Impact Team. And in that particular role, I led their global employee volunteer program for their brand. And then after 4.5 years, I chose to leave and depart to become a consultant. And so in 2022, I left Marriott and I took a role as the director of social impact and ESG for the Uplift Agency, which is a boutique social impact and sustainability consulting firm. And over the course of those 2 years as a consultant, I actually had the opportunity to work with a handful of big brands. And when I say big brands, I mean corporations that are in very different industries, right? So banking and financial services industry, medical device manufacturing, transportation logistics, consumer discretionary. And every single brand has its own unique business model, which really much influences how social impact programming or employee volunteerism exists. But recently, I decided that it was time to go back in-house as a corporate responsibility professional. So now I do very similar work, but for a leading general contractor in the construction industry.
I love the like varied experience that you've had in volunteerism, because I think if you are not a social impact professional listening to this, you might underestimate how difficult it is, the difference between managing an employee volunteer program for office workers as opposed to deskless workers, whether that's in a hotel or, you know, in retail or that kind of thing. Yeah. It's a different type of volunteer engagement and messaging and communication and every aspect of it that you have to pull together. And then that experience that you've had to Uplift, not just seeing these two different, you know, sides of things, but and during a pandemic, no less.
Oh, all the joys for that.
And you left out your book that you've been a contributor to. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of how long ago this was, but very recently, within the last year and a half, I was blessed and had the opportunity along with Beth Steinhorn, Doug Bolton, and Craig Young to bring a book into the world. And so it's called Transforming Disruption to Impact. And it's really all about volunteer engagement. And I think what I really like about the book is that it's not just my voice. It's not just a single person's voice, but it's essentially a capsule that has 20 plus volunteer engagement leader voices from all across the governmental space, the nonprofit sector, and corporate responsibility, who are all sharing their various unique perspectives about the changed landscape of volunteer engagement, with some really like practical action items that professionals in our field can like immediately use and think about incorporating into their own program. So that's I talk about it as a book project, right? It's not necessarily my book per se. It's more of a book project. And I was blessed to be involved in that and to give voice to so many different unique perspectives.
And what I appreciated about the book so much is, yes, there has been so much disruption and change to the landscape, but there's also so much opportunity. Like it very much felt like it had a, you know, positive outlook of where we can go in the volunteer engagement sector. So I appreciate it because it can feel really heavy at times, right? The sector and just lack of funding or, you know, struggling with economic factors or whatnot. So it gave me a lot more hope and some new tools to use. So I greatly appreciated that.
Thanks for that feedback.
So this particular podcast season that we're doing is all focused on stress management in the workplace. And I'm really curious, I have my own perspective on this, but what your perspective is on the connection qualitatively or quantitatively between employee volunteerism and well-being.
Yeah, I think they're intrinsically linked. What I'm not going to do is share a bunch of statistics because I think the jury's out. I think there's a lot of research that has been done, but I do think they're intrinsically linked. So if I sort of like think through the connectivity here, I think we know that volunteer engagement, it reduces stress, anger, anxiety, and all of those sort of angsts that we might feel from a day to day. And I think that's in part because we're social beings, right? Human beings, we're social in nature. And so just the mere contact with others, that actually contributes profoundly to our well-being. And I would say, if I was going to use an example, like it's probably the same type of feeling that we might get when we are around our pets, when we're around animals, right? Like we just get happy. We just love being social and being with others. And I think when you start to like dig deeper into it, we also know that like volunteer engagement, it also helps to alleviate depression. So, we also know that like regular contact with others can also help you to sort of form that solid support system that you can then tap into that will help against depression. Volunteering, it makes you happy. Again, I think people are, and I'm sort of like glass half full here, but I believe that people are hardwired to be good people. And so, when we give to others, we get joy out of that. So we feel much better. We also know that volunteering, it'll also help with like self-confidence. So I'll give you a couple different examples, but when you're doing good and you're providing back to a community, that gives you a sense of accomplishment. And at the same time, it'll also help sort of give you that connectivity to pride and identity. And so think about the connectivity with an ERG or an employee resource group, or maybe you're personally tied to a specific cause, right? So those things, that helps with your self-confidence in addition to potentially taking on volunteer tasks that stretch and challenge you, right? So you work through those things, you add new tools to your toolkit, and over time, you become much more confident doing things that you may have never done before, right? It also gives you a sense of purpose. Thinking about two different generations here, for older generations who might be retired or may have lost a loved one, this gives them a new sense of meaning after that loss. But for younger generations, we also know that they're looking for greater purpose in how they're connecting their full self to their employer. And then I would say, lastly, is sort of like the physical well-being, right? Different volunteer activities require a different level of physical exertion. I'm going to use tree planting and ecosystem restoration as one example. That's a labor-intensive process. If you've ever planted a tree, you
My
leave
back is
that.
twinging thinking about it.
You leave sweaty, but you also leave like with a happy grin because of all that you've accomplished. So I think these things are intrinsically linked. And I think there was even a recent study that also indicated that volunteering is like of all the different like well-being activities that you can do for employees, like volunteering is like top of the list. And I'm not surprised for all these reasons.
Yeah, I think it was the Gallup study. I'd have to go back and double check that. I was going to say the same thing. It seems to always come out on top as one of the only things in a workplace well-being program that will make a difference. A lot of them have like a net neutral difference. And then you look at, I'm a little biased in this coming, having come from Benevity, but you look at their State of Corporate Purpose studies and it's showing that those that engage in an employee volunteer or corporate giving program are more likely to be retained in an organization compared to those that don't. It's in interesting that you talk about purpose, because that is another thing that we're hearing in engagement studies, right? People want purpose in the workplace. Have you heard of or read the book, The Bullshit Jobs Theory?
I have not.
No,
I'm gonna look it up now, though.
I'm reading it right now, but I got turned on to it by a friend, and it started as an article in a paper or whatnot that was basically saying that there's a lot of what people would self-identify as bullshit jobs, and just jobs that like don't know why they exist. I get paid well for it, so I'm gonna keep doing it, but it doesn't necessarily give me purpose. And it's something like 30% of people that identify themselves as having a bullshit job. So if you, I guess the line I'm trying to draw here is if you feel like the work that you're doing doesn't have a lot of purpose and that that is unlikely to change, whether because purposeful jobs pay less or any of those other factors that impact your financial well-being, then volunteerism does seem like that really great opportunity to create purpose in the workplace. That said, how would like it's not quite so easy to design a volunteer program with purpose at the core. So how would you go about doing that?
So I think purpose, there are two sort of segments to this that I want to like sort of make the connection to. So there's individual purpose. As humans, you know, we believe we have a greater purpose for X, Y, and Z. And then there's the company's purpose. These two things could be incredibly separate, or they could be linked together. And I think how you define or how you design your volunteer program will either tie into both of those or one of those, but it'll influence the mechanisms in how you engage people. So let's think through this very quickly. So if we're thinking about this through like the idea of company purpose, right? There are some companies that exist as what somebody would call like a challenger brand, right? Say, for example, if I'm going to use one example, let's say in the automotive industry, an electric vehicle manufacturer might say that their entire purpose is to advance the industry away from fossil fuels, right? Like that's a very different company purpose than say an auto manufacturing company that says, well, our purpose is design of the fastest, most sleek, you know, high quality vehicle, right? Those are two very different purposes for a company. But when you think about a company's purpose, if you're thinking about that first purpose in mind, right, to advance the industry away from fossil fuels, and that's the entire purpose of that company, then your volunteer program, like it can be purposefully designed to supplement and to support the company's business, right? And the overall purpose of what that company is looking to achieve by designing electric vehicles, right? I also think that there's individual purpose. So I think individual purpose is oftentimes really personal, and it may never really intersect with the company at all. I think those things, they can live together, but they can also live very separately. Different companies will take different philosophical approaches to how they instill purpose or how they help employees activate their purpose. Some companies are very prescriptive and say, this is the company's core values. This is the company's purpose. We have a very specific social impact sustainability strategy that we're going to follow. And all of the guidelines, the policies, all of the governance structures and the mechanisms that are put in place are going to help capture the energy of employees and then to push them down this pathway of driving the company's purpose. There's no right or wrong in that. The other sort of philosophical approach that some companies take, and I think Benevity actually has an award for this, but it's providing voice and choice and full agency to allowing employees to like volunteer based on their passion points. And there again, the mechanisms that are created that then empower and equip employees to go down either path or both paths, they're going to be very, very different. And again, there's no right or wrong, but I would say purpose, if you want to be very purposeful, whether it's personal passion points or individual purpose, or whether it's sort of company purpose, the mechanisms that you engage will be different.
Mm-hmm. I'm a big believer in sort of that balance of two. Like, I think both can exist at the same time. When I look at the organizations where it's like all our giving and all of our volunteerism is going to be in support of our corporate purpose, mm-hmm. I think you can disengage people, right? And in my opinion, but
there are ways to have pillars and strategies that are that provide guardrails and guidelines, but are not over prescriptive, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think the good companies will say, here are the guidelines, and then provide, you know, employees some level of latitude and agency in the decision making and what they do within those boundaries. And you're right, it there's like this even keel, because I think taking one hard extreme or the other, right, there are pros and cons to both.
Yeah. And then an interesting like third layer of purpose when you can bring in employee volunteer networks where they self-create and organize their own opportunities within that sort of guideline, right? Like you get a level of creativity and purpose that you wouldn't necessarily see, you know, if it was just you and I organizing those opportunities, you get those different perspectives. Yeah. So at a high level, for those who are listening who maybe, especially in those sort of smaller or medium-sized organizations that maybe don't have a fully developed social impact program or a successful employee volunteer program, what do you feel are like the core components? Like if you were to start from scratch, what needs to be in place?
So the components that I would sort of put in place need to, and this is just one person's opinion, but they need to satisfy three different goals, right? And we talked about, I think we talked about some of this already, but right, there's goals that are tied to the employees, right? There are goals that are completely tied to advancing the business. And then there are goals that are tied to, the community that you're supporting, right? So those are the three sort of goals. There are goals that are attached to three of these different things. But and again, really not necessarily in that order, but those three things need to be achieved. But in order to sort of achieve goals that are sort of within those three different buckets, you essentially have to have a handful of different components that they just need to exist. And how these different things exist are going to look different depending on the company's business model, right? I think the first is having the right capacity and the resourcing. And when I talk about capacity and resourcing, it's essentially the financial capacity, right, to make project grants to support different engagements, but it's also the people resources behind that. So the resources would include having a dedicated team that can really lead the strategy, the programming, and execution of the programs, right? The second component is to really have the structure behind the actual program itself. So it would be things like the guidelines, the policies, the different materials that provide very clear guidance. And when I talk about guidance and policies and guidelines and toolkits, what I'm really talking about are things that will empower and equip employees to make these decisions the most effectively in their local communities, and also providing some level of governance and oversight to like mitigate any risk. The third sort of component that I think needs to exist would be what I would sort of call like a more general like cross-functional support apparatus internally. And what I mean by that is, corporate responsibility teams are generally really small, and they're not going to be the sole reason why they achieve their goals, right? It's going to be 99% of the employees who are actually doing these things that'll help achieve whatever that corporate volunteer goal is. In order to do that, you need support from internal departments, executive leaders, right? These are people who are going to be your allies, and they're also going to support different aspects of your program. So they're going to help with the right communications, right? Internally, externally. They are going to be mechanisms that will support your engaging different employee resource groups or ERGs. And they should also be things like executive champions and folks who are going to support your different initiatives, whether they are with your ERGs or whether they're with external partners. The fourth component is also really important, but sometimes it's overlooked, but it's recognition and acknowledgement. And I'm not necessarily talking about awards, right? We're not talking about awards. What we're really talking about is a mechanism or something that'll acknowledge and recognize the work that people are doing, and then recognize it in a way that people will value. And then I think the last, and this is really important, is feedback. You need a feedback loop. Right. So this is an opportunity for employees to share feedback. This gives them an opportunity to shape and inform and have a little bit of agency and voice for what the employees are doing on behalf of the company, which will give them an opportunity to maybe tie the strategy back to their own individual purpose. Right. So I would say that those are five like key components that need to exist. And I think within those five different components, there are like very specific tactics that you can employ But I would say those are like five really important components.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I feel like people often in smaller organizations overlook the idea of a framework and toolkits and templates because it feels like it's a lot of work, right, to implement those things. And yet the structure that it can provide, and like you're saying, the risk mitigation that it can provide pays off in the long run. As you're going through this, were there any like resources or networks or anything for you that were like critical to your education in this area?
Good question. There are a lot of institutions that I continue to get resources from. Benevity, I think, is a good resource. I've always been a big fan of Benevity. I'm also a big fan of ACCP or the Association of Corporate Citizenship Professionals, even other boutique consulting firms, right? Like, yeah, I'm always going to plug the Uplift Agency, right? They're always great. But even Realized Worth, right? Like, give a good shout out to Angela and Chris, right? These are resources that I continually look at because they have their finger in the pulse for like all things volunteer engagement. And there are many more. Like, there are so many others out there, but those are like sort of like, I would say, like, if I had to say top four.
Yeah, I mean, they all run a great webinar. I was just on one of them this morning, so
Yeah.
I feel that. I just want to interrupt this episode quickly to let you know about our upcoming leadership group coaching program called Less Stress Teams, which launches April 17th. Less Stress Teams is for leaders whose teams are under immense pressures and their stress levels are high. It's hard to know where to start. In this program, we will help you diagnose the root causes of team stress and make an actionable plan to address systemic change. We will guide you through the principles of psychological safety, equipping you with a toolkit to create safer, more harmonious, and happy teams. What I love about our group coaching programs is not only how we take theory and give you tangible actions that you can implement immediately, but how much you're going to learn from your fellow participants. The diversity of thought, industry, and experience brings so much to the table. If your team has been feeling that overwhelm and you're in need of some support to move the needle, this program is for you. To learn more, go to impactfulengagement.com/training. That's impactfulengagement.com/training, and will be linked to in today's show notes. Back to the episode. When you are trying to prove the success of a program like this, measurement is key to that, right? What do you think? I think sometimes we measure the wrong things, though, or we focus in the wrong areas. And it's hard to measure like program success for something like this. What do you think is important to measure for an employee volunteer program?
So the things that you would measure would have to help you measure your progress towards achieving those three goals, right? Things that are tied to the employee, things that are tied to the actual business itself, and then things that are tied to the community that you're serving. So when we're thinking about goals tied to the employee, you're measuring things like that are experiential, satisfaction rates, retention rates, things like your connectedness to the brand. Do you have a greater sense of loyalty or a sense of connectivity to the company's core values as an employee, right? These are all very experiential, and these are things that, depending on the company, you might measure for in your annual like employee engagement survey. Other things that you might measure for might be things that are more tied to the actual business or the brand itself. And so these might be like brand reputation scores, like how does your brand rank as a result of the public's perception of your volunteer engagement in the communities where you do business? And then also, if you're thinking about, what to measure in terms of the goals that are tied to your community-based partners, obviously you're going to need to have a really good relationship and good touch points with your community-based partners, because you're going to need to understand what of your volunteer engagement is attributed to their outcomes, their positive outcomes, and their success, right? So those are the things that I would measure. All of those things are really, really, really difficult to measure because you're not going to measure it in a day, right? You need to set your baseline, and then you also need to like measure year over year to understand, the amount of traction that you're getting and how much progress you're making on these things. But it requires surveying, right? So these are not easy things to measure, but those are the things that I would measure. If I want to understand my success in what I'm trying to achieve for those three goals.
I think you see a lot, because those are harder things to measure, you see a lot of organizations that lean on the participation rates. And then as a result, more is more, right? But more doesn't necessarily get you to those objectives, right? Like what we've just talked about, if you have an organization who's focused on corporate purpose, which is not necessarily going to get you as many volunteers as if you maybe took a balanced approach or one or the other. What's your message for the organizations that are like, participation rate, that's all I need?
I think participation rates are good. By themselves, they don't tell the full story, right? And I think that's the thing. You know, the number of people engaged, hours served, the percentage of people engaged year over year, it only tells you a part of the story. And the part of the story that it tells you is it's more about efficiency, right? It doesn't really tell you whether or not the outcome of what was done is good or bad. And I think that's the thing that it misses. So I think my sort of, you know, my message would be like, that's a good first step. And there are other things that are also beneficial to capture that'll help you get closer to understanding if you're achieving the things that you're actually trying to achieve. The thing that I always tell about participation rates and the number of volunteer hours is essentially it's just a measurement to tell you the number of people that did something.
Yeah.
That's it, right? But it's only a part of the story. I think it's a necessary part of the story when you have all the different pieces of data that'll share a more cohesive narrative of what was accomplished. But I wouldn't say that that's where, you know, you would draw the line on whether it's success or failure.
I think for me, when I hear organizations that are like hyper focused on participation rates, they're looking at benchmarking across their peers, right? So it's like, did I do better than everybody else in my sector? And yet, if they were to focus on what you're saying of those three key areas and really hone in on that, that's looking instead at like, are we doing the best job we can do regardless of what anyone else is doing? Because we don't know their story. We just know that one piece of that information, right? But like, how much more creative and impactful and, you know, collaborative could we be with our community if we focused instead on the metrics that you're talking about? I think that's a much more interesting story to tell.
Yeah. And let me play devil's advocate for a second. Let's go down this path of participation rates, right? Like you might have increased participation rates, but what it doesn't tell you is maybe everybody had a horrible experience.
Yeah.
Right. Or let's talk about this scenario, for example. Let's say I go plant one tree. So one person plants one tree and it takes them a single hour to do it. Let's say the next time, let's say next year, one person, me, goes to plant a tree and I plant that same tree in 30 minutes. I think the story that would tell by itself is that I'm volunteering less. What it doesn't tell you is that I've become far more efficient at having the same outcome, right? So I think the participation numbers, the hours, number of people engaged, it's good. At the same time, I think it only tells you a part of the story. And if you're not careful, it's telling you the wrong story, right?
Yeah.
So that would be my two cents about numbers like those.
Yeah. No, I so appreciate it. There's so many good parts of your book. And one of the topics I want to dive into, I know it could be a massive topic, but there were a lot of different authors in the book who spoke to how often inclusivity is overlooked in volunteer programs, everything from applications to language that is used, and to how people perceive volunteerism, right? For some people, it's just being a good neighbor and like volunteer, like that just doesn't equate. If we were to change one thing in the next 12 months about inclusivity in our volunteer programs, what do you think that should be?
And it's not necessarily changing something about inclusivity in volunteer programs, but it's almost about, so some years ago, I had a manager and he used to say, Jerome, close your eyes and open your mind. And what he was referring to is my sometimes my approach to being overly structured in how I do certain things. And he was like far more creative than me. He was less structured. We were sort of like opposites in terms of work style. But I think when we're talking about inclusivity around volunteer engagement, I think it's a matter of closing your eyes and opening our mind to the reality that not everybody understands or values volunteer engagement the same way. Not everybody understands the words or how volunteerism is defined, especially when you start to think about it outside of the Western context, right? And so if there was anything that I would say could change, I would say it's how we frame volunteer engagement. It's how we sort of need to shift our thinking about how narrowly I think that we talk about it and define it in some ways, because how we define it, how we talk about it in such narrow parameters might be the one thing that makes it not as inclusive as it can be. I'll give you a couple different examples. The word volunteer doesn't exist in some languages, so we know that, when we're talking about volunteer engagement, like there are some people who would say, like, I don't even know what you're talking about, Jerome. So, how we talk about things can change. There are certain communities that don't respond to the word volunteer, but yet they will use the word help. There are some communities that will talk about things like activism and peaceful protesting and marching as a form of advancing a social or environmental issue, yet I think large institutions don't generally talk about that as being a form of service or volunteerism. And so I think we as a society, like we put our own parameters and definitions and we sort of narrowly define what volunteering is and what it isn't and who it includes and who it doesn't include. And so I would say that that's probably the one thing that I think as a society, we can think a little bit more about is how do we widen the aperture in how we frame up and how we define volunteer engagement. And I think once we're able to like unlock that, I think things become more inclusive because we become more open-minded as a result.
I fully agree. And the corporate background that I'm from just wants to put things into smaller boxes, right? And I think that's where it becomes the inclusivity in general becomes the challenge in a corporate workplace where you're just, I'm trying to make it fit into here. And that's not what this is, right? And so if you're saying I want policies that support these programs or help communicate things, you're always taught in communications, right, to go narrow, to go niche, to make it focused. And we're talking actually about being broader and more open-minded. I think that's really hard for a lot of corporate environments to do. They're getting better, but I think it's harder for people to do.
I think it's hard. I do think that folks are getting better about it. One of the big changes that I saw, since 2020 is that companies started to more fully acknowledge how people wanted to give their time in protest and peacefully protesting and marching. And there are some companies that formally created, just as a company would have like a paid volunteer time off policy, they had like paid social justice time off so that you could lend your voice and your time towards, social and environmental advocacy. And so I think that has become a little bit more recognized. It's certainly not mainstream. And I would never prescribe that for most companies. I think that that's it all goes back to like the amount of risk that a company wants to open itself up to. But there are certain companies that recognize that. For example, Patagonia, right? You look at Patagonia and they provide time off for employees who want to protest peacefully for environmental causes, right? You can have a debate all day whether or not it's volunteer engagement. And while we don't have to debate that, right? There, like, who am I to say that it's not? But if a company wants to formally recognize something like that, then and if it works for them, then that's fantastic.
I think there was one of the, oh, I'm gonna get it wrong, but there was an author in your book that was talking about expanding that definition, and I can't remember if she was talking about it as circles or I think it was points of light or something like that. They were talking about how to expand this definition, and they had a term for it, and it's gone, and I'll remember it in the outro when I record it later. But that's a story for another day.
You
One
might be
other
talking about the civic circles, but
civic circles. There we go.
yeah,
Okay.
that's the points of light thing.
Yeah, perfect. One of the things you were also chatting about in the book, I think in your chapter, was how you're not so much a big proponent of volunteer days such as MLK Day in the US, or for us in Canada, we would do like National Volunteer Week. Can you explain a little bit why?
Yeah, so I think I'm not against them, like totally. I think it just needs to work for the nonprofit, right? Like that's the caveat, is that if we are going to choose like a day of service, whether it's 9/11 day of service and remembrance here in the US or MLK day of service or Earth Day or any number of these days that are have been, you know, created to honor a legacy or a person or a significant time in history, like that's great. And it should really just work for the organization that you're doing it for. I think socially, we may have gotten to the habit of sort of this, you know, rinse, wash, and repeat, where the expectation is that every organization has a project, and the expectation sometimes ignores the burden that the nonprofit will feel by having to host a project that might actually not support their service delivery model. When you start to like really look into like the mechanisms that they need as a nonprofit. Some years ago, I wrote an article for Impactor, which is it's a sort of a social impact and sustainability lifestyle magazine. And I speak on this particular topic, especially as it relates to like the holidays, right? You know, the time of giving, whether it's Thanksgiving, Christmas. And some organizations, they experience something like a 400% increase in volunteer requests. Having worked at a nonprofit myself, like I understand how burdensome that is when you're getting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of requests for the same single day. And so you spend so much of your time just trying to reallocate those resources to a different date and a time where you actually need them, but they don't really have an interest in supporting because it's not on that historically significant date and time that they have an expectation that you have a project for them. And so here in the United States, like we have more than 1.5 million tax-exempt organizations. And so whether it's MLK Day of Service or the holiday, a lot of these organizations are pushed beyond their own capacity to even provide services for the community that they support because they are actually busy trying to, you know, they're trying to field requests for one single day in a year. And that takes a toll on nonprofits, right? Because they have resources that are then sort of overwhelmed and overburdened. And then at the same time, while that might be like a moment in time where they're getting all these requests, they're going to experience a big deficit after that. And so it's not uncommon, especially here after MLK Day of Service, that most organizations will have like a 2-month drought. A drought of volunteers when they absolutely need the most. And so that's a social expectation that we've created ourselves. But I think that would be the thing that I think I struggle with the most is, you know, days of service are good. Caveat to that is when it works for the organization. And I think from my experience, I think more often than not, especially for those federal holidays, nonprofits just want the day off. Not all of them,
Yeah.
but for some of them, like I've had conversations with some organizations and they're like, Jerome, we don't work that day. And
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, that's fantastic. Like, take the day off. Like,
Yeah.
don't let me make you create a project. Like, take the day
Yeah.
off. You need your respite probably more than I do.
having worked at the Volunteer Center of Calgary, I can tell you it's the exact same thing. National Volunteer Week, National Volunteer Month for Canada in April, that website spike in traffic looking for volunteer opportunities, the number of phone calls, and then complete drought for the months after that. Like, and I would ask, you know, if you're an organization, if you're a employee volunteer program looking to build out opportunities, I would ask yourself, are you building a culture of volunteerism, or are you building a awareness checkbox marketing activity? And like, and then maybe that's putting it a little bit harshly, but like having, you know, a good look of like, is this actually about giving back to the community, or is it about hitting a milestone kind of thing?
And if I'm going to add to this too, and this is probably a whole different conversation for a different day, but like specifically here in the United States, like MLK Day of Service, the conversation has now evolved to a point where the conversation is whether or not the nonprofit sector has appropriated a day of service and in a way that doesn't actually honor Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a conversation that is now becoming more front and center, especially for days of service, right? The conversation or the question is, has the nonprofit sector in the United States, have they hijacked MLK Day as, you know, have they hijacked that day in a way that no longer really honors the legacy and what he was about?
Mm-hmm.
So again, conversation for a different date and time, but like, I think, you know, there are certain days of service where, you know, it might be time that we, you know, we think about what we are doing on those days. And if it doesn't necessarily need to have a volunteer component, then I think that that's certainly okay.
And I think you and I spoke about this in a previous conversation about like, we can be more creative about these with our employee volunteer
100%.
Programs of like, is it about building awareness? Is it about educating on what nonprofits need? Like,
yeah.
Are there different ways that we can look at our own week of service or week, you know, as a company that isn't tied to these external dates that other people are using? You know, can we get more people signed up for a platform where they're going to be, you know, using volunteer opportunities more? Like, definitely tons of different ways to do this. Wanted to kind of land on some of the folks who will be listening to this podcast episode are not social impact professionals. They are leaders who have stressed out teams, who are overwhelmed, and they're going to see this as an opportunity, like we talked about at the beginning of the call, of how can I use volunteerism to, you know, help engage my team, improve their well-being, give us a really great experience together. And I've just heard all these things about how we need to have, you know, impact and, you know, we want to be doing right by the community. And there's so many different like layers of this as a non-social impact professional. So what is your perspective on how the average employee or leader who wants to organize a volunteer opportunity should think about impact for their event?
A good question. I'm not sure that I have a great answer for this, to be honest with you, because the way that I think about impact is going to be very different than the average employee.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, like, I don't know that I'm going to have an expectation that they're thinking about impact the same way that I do, right? Like, that's my full-time job.
Is it experience? Is impact the experience then, though?
Sure. I think it might be, right? Like, and look, there's no right or wrong here. I think one of the things that I've learned myself, focusing on volunteer engagement for as long as I have now, I've gotten to a point where, like, I like understanding people's motivations for why they're doing something. It's important, not because I want to judge it. Like, I'm far beyond ever judging people, their motivations. There's no right or wrong why they want to volunteer in my mind. Like, I don't judge their reasons or their rationale, but I think their motivations for why they want to volunteer will very much influence what they believe impact is, right? I think there are a lot of people who, you know, for them, impact might be, you know, they are leading a new project for their ERG, and for them, impact is, you know, having a demonstrable impact on you know, being able to see some positive change as a result of leading their ERG to volunteer at a specific organization for a particular community. I also know that, and also at the same time, leading their ERG, right? They're also learning, they're also adding to their own professional development, right? Maybe they are not a manager of others, but in this particular instance, now they're managing other people who might not have a responsibility to them, but they're learning managerial traits, qualities, and skills, right? So maybe those are like the two things that are impactful to them. Maybe it's, I'm going to get to learn new things by leading this group of people that I wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to do in my day-to-day role. And at the same time, impact will be, I get to leave knowing that I've changed somebody's life for an organization. For another person, impact to them might be, hey, you know, I supported, you know, the animal shelter down the street, and I'm leaving there after 3 hours with an incredible high because, you know, dogs mean so much to me, and I had a fantastic experience, right? So it's really hard for me to say what is impact for another person, because I think those things are very personal. They can be very personal to a person. So that's really hard for me to define.
But I like what you're saying of essentially have a think before you organize this opportunity, what you want to get out of it, right? Is it that team engagement? Is it, we care about this specific cause, we want to make a difference? Is it, you know, I want to build some skill sets in this area? Like, go into it with a little bit of intention.
Yeah. And that's probably a really good way to sort of sum that up, is have an intention, and then just sort of build everything off of that. And everybody's intent is going to be different. What they want to walk away with will be different. But I think having that sort of understood and identified up front is really important.
Well, thank you so much, Jerome, for your time. Before we let you go, where can everybody find you online, follow your musings on employee volunteerism, all the things?
You know, I would say nowadays, just find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the easiest place to find me and to find things that I've written, or to just, you know, drop me a DM and say hello.
Sounds good. Well, we'll link to it in today's show notes. Thank you again for coming on the podcast.
Thanks. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much to Jerome for joining us on today's podcast episode. If you want to connect with Jerome and follow his insights, I've linked to his LinkedIn in today's show notes. As a wrap up, I cannot stress the importance and value of an employee volunteer program. So if you are a leader listening to this and you don't know where to start with designing an employee volunteer program, please don't hesitate to reach out to me at victoria@impactfulengagement.com, and I'd be happy to chat. And final call out, our Less Stressed Teams group coaching program for leaders launches mid-April. So make sure you snag a seat before they are all gone. Head to impactfulengagement.com/training to learn more. Until next week.